is the Monday Mindset Podcast, where we share things of interest to us and hopefully to you.
So let's get started with episode number 39.
And this week, it's Daisy's turn to share something with us. Daisy, what are you going to share with us today?
Well, Terry, having said I wasn't going to come straight back to James Clear, I decided I would. So we are back with the same episode I was talking about before from Rangan Chatterjee's podcast, Feel Better, Live More, How to Build Good Habits and Break Bad Ones with James Clear. And as we spoke about before, I was telling you about some of the new things that he was sharing with Rangan, but mentioned towards the end of the episode about how he ties identity to habits and the importance of identity-based habits for long-term change and getting habits to truly stick. And I just thought, no, that's too important a subject to me. And as we'd already been talking about James Clear, no, I'm just going to come back to that to wrap it up. And after that, I promise I will stop talking about people who talk about small steps and tiny steps and atomic habits and that subject, and I'll go and find something else. But this subject really interests me. And I know you're a fan of James Clear, so I didn't think you'd mind. So really, I wanted to talk about the identity element, but of course I got sidetracked along the way and there were some other things that he said that were just too good not to share. Rangan made the observation quite early on in the podcast that he felt from, he's a real fan of the book Atomic Habits, but he made the observation that the habits are on the surface really of what James is talking about in his book. But what he's really doing is trying to get us to understand ourselves better. And James picked up on this to talk about self-awareness and how he sees this as the crucial first step to changing habits. And that if you want to be an architect of habits rather than a victim of habits, this is where you need to start. And he says it's a common myth, actually, that behavior change is hard. He says the truth is that we're changing and adapting all the time because of changes to our environment and context. He says if you want to change in an intentional way, rather than have it happening to you, you know, because your environment changes, so you're forced to change, basically. But that's the point he was making there, that actually changing and adapting is something that we do all the time. And in some ways, you find it easy when you have to do it. You're forced into changing behavior. But he said, yeah, when you're thinking more about an intentional change, that's when it gets a bit tricky. But so he says, if you want to change in an intentional way, rather than it just happening to you, then you have to start with self-awareness and seeing some of the behaviors that you're usually blind to. And he says, society tends to value results over process. Results are usually pretty visible, whereas the process is mostly hidden. And he says, people who focus only on results win one time, but people who focus on systems win again and again. So he says that focusing on building better habits and developing better systems is more productive overall and in the long term than just focusing on achieving a particular outcome. So back to self-awareness as the first step. It says you need to identify a few things before you start trying to change habits. What am I actually doing right now? What is the truth of this situation? Where do I want to go? What is the truth of what I want to achieve and who I want to become? It's then easier to bridge that gap between where you are now and where you want to get to. And they got into a conversation about good versus bad habits, which I found quite interesting. And he says that all behavior plays a part in your life. And most habits actually will produce different outcomes across different times, contexts, environments during your life. It says there's all sorts of discussion around the terminology and the value of labeling habits good or bad. But his framework, then the one that he finds most useful, is one of outcomes, immediate outcomes and ultimate outcomes. It says it's a really good way of looking at quote-unquote good versus bad habits. And he says bad habits usually have a favorable result for an immediate outcome, but longer term, they tend to be less favorable. For example, something like eating donuts. In the immediate outcome is, you know, is one of satisfaction, satisfying a craving, whatever it is. Long term, however, your ultimate outcome, as he refers to it, if you continue to eat donuts on a daily basis, is going to have probably a cumulative, pretty unfavorable outcome. Good habits are the other way around. So they tend to be less enjoyable for the immediate outcome, but the payoff ultimately, long term, tends to be much more favorable. So adopting a new exercise routine, for example, might be a bit painful in the immediate term, but long term, it's going to reap rewards. He says this really helps explain why we tend to fall back on and repeat the bad habits, because they serve you in the moment. But he says, actually, interestingly, from an evolutionary point of view, our brains are wired for immediate returns. It makes sense from an evolutionary standpoint that we're reactive in the moment because, you know, we needed to be. And we still are to a certain extent. You know, if it's pouring with rain, you want to take shelter straight away. You don't want to, you know, do it in an hour's time when you're soaking wet. But it gets more confused in the modern world in general. Society, he's saying, is increasingly focused on delayed returns. So we have this constant battle of this mismatch between what our brains are wired to do and what the societal norms are. And one of the ways around this is to either delay gratification or pull their long-term rewards into the present moment so that you can get some feel-good element right now. And he has this quote to sum it up, which I thought was really good. The cost of your good habits are in the present. The cost of your bad habits are in the future. Good habits are the ones that serve you well in the long term, but it's helpful to find ways to get some of that reward in the present moment. And it made me think, actually, of your hamburger model from the other week and the types of people in those different mm-hmm. quadrants, you know, those who thought about future reward and those who lived in the present. It tied in well with that for me, thinking about, and again, coming to this whole identity thing and understanding who you are and how you tick really is, again, with Gretchen Rubin, all that kind of work, I feel anyway, is really key to figuring out how to set up strategies for getting habits to stick. And they talked about this in some detail in the podcast, and he talks about it in a lot in his book. I'm just going to mention it briefly, but I found it interesting. He was talking about his four laws of getting habits to stick. He said, these are the things you need to do if you want habits, new habits to stick, or conversely, trying to break habits that you want to get rid of. And you apply these four rules in reverse. So one, you make them obvious, easy to see with lots of visual cues. Yeah, they've got to be attractive and appealing, or why would you do them? They need to be easy to do. This is where the little steps comes in. And I mentioned before about friction. You need to have, you need to reduce the friction as much as possible, make them really easy to do. And they've got to be satisfying in some way. You've got to get some reward from them. And as I just said, the reverse is true as well. So, you know, make them less obvious, less attractive, less easy, less satisfying if you're trying to get rid of a habit. When you're reinforcing habits, it's really important to choose external rewards that align with the internal identity that you're trying to build. And also try to increase the speed at which you get that reward as much as possible to maintain that strong connection between the behavior and the reward. So try and keep that feedback loop nice and tight. And the opposite, again, if you're trying to break a habit, the consequence, the negative consequence of that action. It's funny when I'm listening to these things often, I think of dog training and what's really important. And the same things applies to us, doesn't it? That it's tying the consequence to the behavior. And they always say that with dogs, don't they? There's no point in telling a dog off if he's peed on the floor when you've been out shopping, there's no point telling them off when you come back. Unless you can catch them in the moment doing it, they just won't know what you're talking about. And it seems to me, that's certainly what I take away from what he discussed, but it sounds like from the way he talks that the identity-based habits is his key concept. And he says that most of what he does is pulling together other people's ideas and packaging them up and presenting them in an easy to understand way. But this connection between identity and behavior is his. It's one of the reasons why I just wanted to stick with him for another week and talk about it. He says, true behavior change is really identity change. If you start to look at yourself in a new way, you're not even pursuing behavioral changes anymore. You're just acting in alignment with the person you see yourself to be. Once you identify as that person, behavior change is easy. It's not a challenge. It just is. It's a part of you. And for him, this is why habits really matter. He says, because they reinforce a new identity and reshape the way you think about yourself. And it's more important and lasting than just trying to establish new habits for external rewards. And that's why I say it seems to be his key concept. It seems to be what's more important for him. These habits are all about helping you to become your best self. That's certainly the sense I get from him. And I will actually read his entire book at some point. And he has this analogy, which I really liked. He says, think about it like this. Every action you take is like a vote for the type of person you want to become. And every small action you take in that direction casts a vote. The more you do, the more votes you cast. And this builds up evidence for the person you are becoming. And he says, just carrying on with that analogy, he says, it doesn't have to be unanimous. A majority will do. And he says, while it's true that behavior influences beliefs and beliefs influence behavior, he thinks it's best to lead with behavior. Start small and build this evidence. And this evidence towards who you want to be is quite important. He says that the whole fake it till you make it, he says it's sort of okay, but it lacks evidence to back it up. So you're basically trying to build beliefs with no evidence. And he jokes about it. And he says that there's another word for that, and it's called being delusional. So he says, just start small and build the evidence that supports the identity you want to become. But the key element here is you need to know what that is. So what identity do you want to build and who do you want to become? That's where you start. So there it is. lots more that he talks about, but I really wanted to, just wrap up what I felt like I'd started and felt like I needed to finish from James Clear, as it seems to be his key concept.
It's interesting because after we talked about this last time, I did go back and listen to the original episode because I am such a fan. And I had already started talking about it in my work with people. And I'm glad that you brought up the point about habits that are going to be good for us are less comfortable in the beginning. So you kind of pay the price for them up front. They're less comfortable. They, might be more painful. They're not as enjoyable. But the benefit that comes, the outcome, is down the road versus those habits that are more problematic for us. We don't pay the cost for them until much further down the road sometimes. But we get to avoid pain in the immediate, or we get to have pleasure or whatever in the immediate. So I'm glad that you brought up that point, because I think that's a really good one to focus on about why we keep struggling with our habit changes. I listen to so many people who talk about, for example, I know what to do. I know why it's good for me. Why am I not doing it? And to come back to this idea that it makes sense why we struggle. Mm. And like you said, that our brains are wired one way, but the way things in our world are set up, it's really not in alignment. So I loved that part. I'm really glad that you brought that back.
Yeah, I like when they talk about something like that, because it just takes off that blame or a certain amount of it anyway, where so many of us tend to blame ourselves and berate ourselves. And if someone actually tells you, well, you know, you're fighting a bit against nature here, your brain is wired to react that way, there was a very good reason for that, and it would have really, really benefited you, you know, a couple of hundred years ago, but now not so much. But you are kind of fighting against this thing that you're hardwired to do. Here are some ways you might want to do that.
And that, yeah, like you said, there are some ways we can work with that and rein that in, because the other piece is either blame myself and feel down about it, or say, oh, really? My brain is hardwired that way? Oh, well, then I can't do anything about it. And this is really more the middle, accepting the reality, but still doing things to manage that reality differently, I think is key.
And it taps in nicely, I think, to your episode from last week about the self-compassion, and it's finding that middle ground, isn't it? So it's not like the sort of the giving up side, and it's not the really berating side, but it's that middle ground of self-compassion with actually sitting with it and saying, okay, yeah, that's not ideal behavior, but, you know, I'm not going to get really judgmental about myself. I'm not going to berate myself. I'm going to figure out some strategies of how to work around it with self-compassion.
Also to help reinforce why I maybe need to do some significant planning for how I will implement this, because I am working against some hard wiring here. It's not just going to be easy breezy because I decide I want it to be so. And so it may actually even give us more motivation to really focus on what approach we need to be using, rather than just struggling and believing it's either something wrong with us or, again, as we said, if I know it's my brain is hardwired this way, well, then I'll just go sit on the couch instead because I can't do anything about it.
I really like the casting votes analogy, that every little step you make, however insignificant it potentially feels in the moment, no, it's a little, it's another vote that's building up the evidence for that person you want to be. And every vote counts, you know, so whatever it is, you know, if it was some new exercise regime and it was just one press up a day, whatever it is, but that's a vote cast. And they add up. And before you know it, you've got a majority, and that's who you are now.
Plus, it, as you said, with the identity piece, it helps you to start seeing yourself differently. Because as you're achieving those small steps, the identity is changing. And I love this idea about the identity. And I know last time when we talked about this episode, we talked about this some, but I see this as so important in the work that I do and some of the communities that you and I are in, that tying the habits that you want to create in your life to how you see yourself or want to be able to see yourself takes out so much of the decision-making once you really get going with it. And I always use the example that because I have for years now been someone who eats low-carb or ketogenically, I don't have as many decisions to make. When I go to a restaurant or order carryout food, I'm not overwhelmed by, will I be good today or will I be bad today? Because I'm someone who eats low carb or ketogenically. It's already my identity. So now I don't have to make as many decisions because the habits are so well developed and strengthened that they are my identity now.
Yes, that's a very good point, actually. I've been looking through some of the takeout menus where I'm moving to in the UK. And yeah, that's what I've been doing as well. I've been looking through the menus, finding what I can eat according to the way I eat. And, you know, sometimes there's not enough on there. Yeah, that's not a place that's going to work for me at all. So I'll discount that one. But hey, yeah, this other place, gosh, there are a lot of options that I can go for. That's going to work for me, for who I am.
And I think it really, that just supports the idea that our habits become our identity. And then there's less decision-making that has to take place to keep the habits going. Mm. In the beginning, when you're first starting a habit or, you know, when you're working toward developing it, you have to interrupt some old thinking and you have to do some extra things, but it gets easier as those habits become part of your identity and are aligned with your identity.
But it's also important, I think, to be thinking about them at the beginning as well. When he talks about this difference between having external goals and thinking about who you want to be and what you want to achieve in that light, staying in the area that we're familiar with, but thinking about having a loose goal like, you know, I want to lose weight. Well, really, that's, you know, that's an external goal and it's a bit too arbitrary. Whereas actually you need to reshape it right from the beginning, even though you start implementing small steps in habits to start changing your behavior, which is going to impact your identity, but also thinking about the identity side of it at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to be the kind of person who can, you know, keep up with my kids in the park, whatever it is, thinking about your identity, building that picture as a part of who you are with all the emotional aspects and all the other things that come into play. I think it just really helps visualize thinking about the person you want to be rather than just a kind of external, much more arbitrary goal. It's a stronger image, if nothing else, to work towards, isn't it?
Absolutely. Another thing that you brought up in this, in your kind of intro to this other part of the episode, is the idea of needing to bring some of the long-term positive into the present for those habits that require us to do some things that maybe are a little more challenging for us. And I think one of the concepts that he talks more about in the book than he did in this interview, similar concept to what BJ Fogg talks about in Tiny Habits, but it's the idea of celebrating those small steps. And it's not always with a reward, like it's not always giving yourself something or buying yourself something or doing something for yourself. But sometimes it's just as simple as saying, yeah, I did it. When, you know, let's say for me this week, I completed the fasting goal that I had. And so I have a little place in my phone calendar where I just put a big smiley face, but some way of acknowledging the positive feeling of it now. Versus, ooh, that was difficult, but someday it's going to feel good that I did it. The rewards, the way of celebrating now is, I think, so important to be practicing.
Yes, absolutely. To tick that sort of instant reward box that he was talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it can be as easy as that. In a way, is how, like, putting gold stars on a chart. I mean, Rongan talked about that. The whole family does it. You know, they have a tick chart and they put the gold stars or the ticks or whatever on that, get that, you know, immediate just sense of gratification. Like you say, it doesn't have to be some kind of big reward.
Mm-hmm. And I think some people set themselves up if they only rely on a reward system. Because sometimes it gets more challenging to find meaningful enough rewards that don't contradict with the identity you're building. And so, for example, if it's around weight loss or something like that, if I reward myself for doing well this week by eating a dessert, that's in contrast to the identity that I'm building. And so some of us, I think, need to maybe even reshape that word. It's not always giving ourselves a reward, but celebrating how it feels to have accomplished what we've accomplished or celebrating the act that we just completed as maybe even more important than actually a reward system.
Yes, and I thought it was interesting. He did actually mention about if you have some kind of reward, that it has to be in alignment with what you're doing. So he used a couple of examples, but one of them is if you're saving for your retirement and you've hit the goal for that month or whatever it is, well, going out and buying yourself something is not a reward that's in alignment with what you're setting up there. And he used the example of, choosing something instead, like giving yourself an hour of freedom to do something that you might fancy doing that you wouldn't normally do, which is in perfect alignment with your goal of planning and saving for your retirement, because the whole point of that is to have freedom to do the things you want. So really important to pick rewards that don't go against what you're trying to achieve, but they're very much in alignment with it. And like you say, it doesn't have to be some kind of physical reward.
So as you can tell, for both of us, James Clear, maybe we can start a list of people that anytime we talk about them, we're both enthusiastic about it. But obviously, James Clear is on that list.
Definitely.
That there's always more to discuss about everything. And as you said, it was worth revisiting after I went back and listened to it after our last time, when we recorded about it. I got excited again. And I had just reread the book recently. So it's amazing how it can get reinforced for you and get that enthusiasm going again. So hopefully everyone has been able to revisit the James Clear topic with us, and again, might inspire them to explore his work even more if they haven't done so already. So I hope everyone has a great week, and thanks for bringing this one back, Daisy.
You're very welcome. And actually, that just reminded me, and it's something that I've signed up for. I haven't read them yet, but they sound very good. And that's his 3-2-1 newsletter. Apparently, they come out on Thursdays. And so I'm looking forward to getting my first one next week.
Nice.
So that's the small step I've taken in my James Clear, changing my identity, small steps forward. Well, I hope you have a lovely week, Terry. And you at home too.
Thanks, Daisy. Take good care, everybody. Bye-bye.